You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
Good afternoon. The news a fortnight ago that Leo Robin had died sent my memory racing back to a day almost exactly 9 years ago when I sat in a room with Robin in Beverly Hills and tried to get him to own up to the fact that he was a talented man. It wasn't easy for him, because Robin surely ranks as the most modest among all the outstanding songwriters. His professional colleagues used to call him Mr. Clean or Mr. Nice Guy because of his habit of never saying anything about anybody that didn't sound like an advertising plug. It was, for instance, a life's ambition of Harry Warren to get either Leo Robin or Ira Gershwin to say something nasty about somebody, anybody. Warren once asked Ira about the Schubert brothers, and Ira began to say, "Well," and then Warren pounced triumphantly and insisted on counting that hesitant "well" of Ira's as a damning condemnation, which indeed it was. But with Robin, nobody ever got him to criticise anybody but himself. I recall him as a tiny bird-like man, very shy, very diffident, and frankly bewildered that some screwball should have travelled 6,000 miles just to ask him how songs like Louise and Easy Living came to be written. Robin was a native of Pittsburgh who saved up $600 from his youthful labours as a newspaper reporter and came to New York determined to become a Broadway playwright. He showed one of his works to George Kaufman. That was a mistake. The only plays Kaufman ever approved of were his own, which puts in question his taste as well as his morality. Kaufman told Robin to have a good time with the $600, forget about playwriting and go back to Pittsburgh. Instead, Robin moved on to a man called Louis Gelsler, who asked Robin if he'd written anything else. Shyly and a little bit shamefacedly, Robin showed Gelsler a song, and he took one look at it and told Robin he'd found his vocation. The song was this one.
Sounds like a train song, if you ask me.
My cutie's due at 2:22. She's coming through on a big choo-choo.
That should be train.
She's been away for months.
Did she?
But I haven't cheated once.
Oh, come now,
stayed darling. Home nights, didn't take.
You got two left feet.
I
anyway.
Wasn't taking any chance. Didn't flirt, and you know that hurt. But I just couldn't do my cutie dirt.
You're an honorable
days
lad.
Days were blue and nights were black. But I just knew she'd come back. Cause I love her. She loves me and say,
I would say that she's a very good girl.
Don't think there ain't no Santa Claus. I know darn well there is because my cutie's due at 2:22 today.
You tell a wonderful story, John, you really do.
My cutie's due at 2:22. She's coming through on a DC-2.
You got a girl in space.
I met each Boeing jet, but she hasn't shown up yet.
Friday airport.
Stayed home nights at the pad. It was awfully lonesome, Dad. What I mean, a nothing scene. Just me and a TV screen. Oh, the price was right most every night. In how those western stars can fade.
Hot
but now she's coming, everything's okay.
That do make it okay.
It sure do, my TV set is staying dark. And if you don't dig the last remark, my cutie's due 2:22 today.
Bye, I'm off to meet that old choo-choo.
And I'm kinda late for the DC-2.
My cutie's due at 2:22 today.
Johnny Mercer and Bobby Darin singing the first apprentice work of Leo Robin. But I think there's something very badly wrong with that story. Robin wrote the words all right, and they were his first published song words. But how come that a provincial aspirant who's never been to the big city before should have written a song with a successful and famous man like Albert von Tilzer? Tilzer by now had hits like Take Me Out to the Ball Game, Put Your Arms Around Me Honey, Give Me the Moonlight, I'll Be With You in Apple Blossom Time, and dozens of others. The story of the young Pittsburghian with a song in his trunk makes a good story, but I think not too much more. At any rate, that song, which came in 1926, set Robin on his way. Born April the 6th, 1900, he was just the right age at the right time in the right place to take advantage of a talent for rhyming barely equaled by anybody. Once he managed to gain a toehold in Timpan Alley, he was able to fill a vacuum created by Irving Caesar, who, after collaborating with Vincent Humans on No No Nanette, had had some kind of lover's quarrel with Humans and left the composer without lyricists, or rather, without enough lyricists to keep him going, because the credits for this next song list two lyricists, Robin and also that daredevil of the bobsleigh runs, Clifford Gray.
Hallelujah, and you'll shoo the blues away.
The big song of the 1927 Broadway hit, Hit the Deck, later made into the MGM picture from which that fragment of soundtrack was extracted. The singers there were Tony Martin, Vic Damone, Mel Torme, Debbie Reynolds, Jane Powell, and there were also the jumping up and down of Ann Miller. Now, after Hit the Deck had established itself, Leo Robin went on to the staff of that great talent finder, Max Dreyfus, who paid Leo $25 a week as a retainer and then tried to find him commissions. Now, one day, Dreyfus ups to Robin and says, how would you like to go to Hollywood? 3 months retainer, and you have to write with a guy called Dick Whiting. Now, to Robin, who hero-worshipped every good songwriter there was, the thought of working with the great Richard Whiting was almost too much for him, because he'd never actually seen Whiting, and Whiting had certainly never seen him. So they arranged to meet on the railway station in Chicago and go on to California together from there. But then there was a muddle, they switched the venue. Whiting apparently was traveling from Detroit, so they agreed to meet in the lobby of the Sherman Hotel in Chicago. Whiting gets the bellboy to page Robin, which is the only time in songwriting history where a bellboy has introduced two collaborators to each other. Well, they get to Hollywood, and their first assignment is to write for a star who can't speak English very well. A promising beginning. What they do to overcome it is to write a song with a lot of one-syllable words in it.
Beautiful, you're so beautiful. You haunt me all day through. Every little breeze seems to whisper Louise. Birds in the trees seem to twitter Louise. Each little rose tells me it knows I love you, love you. Every little bit that I feel in my heart seems to repeat what I felt at the start. Each little sigh tells me that I adore you, Louise. Just to see and hear you is joy I never knew. But to be so near you thrills me through and through. Anyone can see why I wanted your kiss. It had to be, but the wonder is this. Can it be true? Someone like you could love me, Louise.
Leo Robin was always very grateful to Maurice Chevalier for singing that song, but then he was always very grateful to everybody for doing anything. When the trade papers ran a list of the big hits of the day, they misspelt Louise so that it came out in the papers as Louse. But Robin didn't mind. The song established him as a hot potato in Hollywood. He and Whiting stayed with Chevalier for a while, and in 1930, the three of them perpetrated a picture called Playboy of Paris, all about a man who is a waiter by day and a playboy by night. A convenient arrangement because most playboys in those days looked like waiters anyway. The film was a stinker, but there was one song in there which was a real pearl. Robin never mentioned it to me in his talk, but then he never mentioned anything about himself unless you dragged it out of him. Imagine writing something like this and being modest about it.
Will I ever find the girl in my mind, that one who is my ideal? Maybe she's a dream, and yet she might be just around the corner waiting for me. Will I recognize the light in her eyes that no other eyes reveal? Or will I pass her by and never even know that she is my ideal?
The best song from the film Playboy of Paris. Writers like Robin found that knocking out songs for pictures was a less subtle affair than writing for the stage, because in the pictures there was no attempt to integrate the songs into the plot. But in 1930, when Robin found himself working with the great Ernst Lubitsch, the three of them got together to create something a bit more ambitious than the usual song with verse and chorus. This time, there was no Chevalier. Instead, they had Jack Buchanan, who played a count posing as a barber. An excellent example, I think, of a man pretending to be something higher than he really is. The heroine, played by the Iron Butterfly, Jeanette MacDonald, is engaged to marry some fathead, but at the last minute she runs away on the famous Blue Express, carrying her to Monte Carlo. In this sequence of escape, there is a song, and Miss MacDonald sings it to a chorus accompaniment of the peasants standing in the fields watching the train go by. For its time, it was a very daring, very imaginative thing, and to this day remains famous in the evolution of the movie musical.
Blow, whistle, blow away, blow away the past, go engine. Rain into the rainbow, fly with me. Gone, gone, all my grief and woe. What matter where I go if I am free? Beyond the blue horizon waits a beautiful day. Goodbye to things that bore me. Joy is waiting for me. I see a new horizon. My life has only begun. Beyond the blue horizon lies a rising sun.
Beyond the Blue Horizon, music by Richard Whiting, words by Leo Robin. And if they could knock off songs like that in every picture, how come they ever split up? Well, it was just bad luck, really. One day, Robin received a call from New York saying his mother was very ill. So he went home while Whiting stayed in Hollywood. If only Whiting's mother could have arranged to be ill at the same time, maybe the partnership would have survived. But alas, instead of going east, Whiting went to Fox Pictures on a new contract, working with several other writers. Robin eventually returned to Hollywood and did resume the Whiting connection. But by the time he was ready for full-time work again, he entered into a new professional marriage, the one for which I think most people remember him best. There was a piano player called Reichenberg, who had had a success on Broadway with his first song, Moaning Low, and then went west like everybody else who ever sold a song. In 1932, this Reichenberg, alias Ralph Ranger, working as a piano player with Paramount, told Robin there was a chance to write a couple of songs for a new Crosby picture called The Big Broadcast. Robin obliged and found himself with a new partner.
Please lend your little ear to my pleas. Lend a ray of cheer to my pleas. Tell me that you love me too. Please let me hold you tight in my arms. I could find delight in your charm. Every night the whole life through, your eyes reveal that you have the soul of the nicest man I've met. But how long must I play the part? Tearful Julie. happy ending, and please tell me that you love me and swear by stars above me. Tell me that you love me too.
Please is about as simple a title as you can get for a song. But Robin was quite renowned for his ability to come up with original titles, sometimes so original that they strike posterity as being a bit singular at times. It was, for instance, Give Me Liberty or Give Me Love, I Don't Want to Make History, You Took the Words Right Out of My Heart, and even Gather Ye Lip Rouge While You May. There was at least one occasion when Robin came up with one of the best titles of the 1940s. The only trouble was he came up with it in the 1930s and it got thrown away. The year was 1936, and the film, a really terrible business called Three Cheers for Love. Producer's daughter goes to stage school, where all the students are really hardened professionals. Girl lands contract with Miracle Pictures. You guessed it, the studio slogan is, if it's a good picture, it's a miracle. Well, this one was a very bad picture. But there was this outstanding title. As for the way it was done in the picture, I can never make up my mind about this, whether the song was worse than the picture, or the picture was worse than the singer, or the singer was worse than both of them put together. But it just goes to show that there's no such thing as a good title if the music that goes with it and the singer that interprets it are nothing more than a bundle of old washing. And only 2 years later, Robin and Ranger were to know their finest hour. Now, I've told this story before exactly as Robin told it to me, but I'll have to tell it again because this is a tribute to Leo Robin and it's the centerpiece of his Hollywood career. He and Ranger were assigned to a kind of B-picture musical about a race between two transatlantic liners. Remember, this was the period when the Queen Mary and the Normandy were constantly beating each other's records for the trip. Anyway, in the picture, both liners are American, and the plot, such as it was, included a moment which nobody seemed to be able to write properly. There was this divorced couple who meet accidentally on one or another or both of the liners. They have to have this scene where they exchange dialogue and tell each other they still love each other without actually saying that. Now, the producer, who knew what he wanted but didn't really, tried writing team after writing team, only to throw them back in their hutches and start again. At last, he had the one great idea of his life. Very often, the subtlety which eludes you in prose can come easily when there's a good tune. Robin and Ranger were told to write the scene in song and make it funny. Well, Robin started to write, having read the script, and kept writing things which weren't really so much funny as pathetic. Time went by, and at last the producer demanded to see the song. Well, Robin had been holding it back because, as he explained, he didn't think it had many laughs. It was for a comedian to sing, and yet it didn't have a single joke in it. Well, the producer wanted to hear it anyway, so the three of them retired to the office. Ranger plays the piano, and Robin starts to sing to the producer, Michael Leeson. In Robin's own words, he says, halfway into the second chorus, and I see Mitch Leeson has pulled out his handkerchief and is wiping his eyes. And I thought, oh God, what's this? It's supposed to be funny and the fella's weeping. Everyone we played the song for, they all start weeping. Well, Robin bet Ranger $10 that the song will be thrown out. He lost, because the song was this one.
Thanks for the memory of things I can't forget. Journeys on a jet, our wondrous week in Martinique and Vegas and roulette. How lucky I was. And thanks for the memory of summers by the sea, dawn in Waikiki. We had a pad in London, but we didn't stop for tea. How cozy it was. Now since our breakup, I wake up alone on a gray morning after. I long for the sound of your laughter, and then I see the laughs on me. But thanks for the memory of every touch, a thrill. I've been through the mill. I've lived a lot and learned a lot. You love me not, and still I miss you so much. Thanks for the memory of how we used to jog, even in a fog. That barbecue in Malibu, away from all the smog. How rainy it was. Thanks for the memory of letters I destroyed, books that we enjoyed. Tonight, the way things look, I need a book by Sigmund Freud. How brainy he was. Gone are those evenings on Broadway. Together we'd go to a great show. But now I begin with a late show and wish that you were watching too. I know it's a fallacy that grown men never cry. Baby, that's a lie. We had a bed of roses, but forgot that roses die. And thank you so much.
The song which deservedly won the Oscar that year and stands alongside One for My Baby as the best example of how a lyric can also become a short story. And censored too, because there was one line, The Weekend at Niagara, when we hardly saw the falls, which was a substitute for the original, which was A Weekend at Niagara when we never saw the falls. The studio executive decided that was dirty, so Robin changed it to Hardly, and he told me that he thought that Hardly was even dirtier. Incidentally, when I say the song deservedly won the Oscar, a lot of people will dispute that and make out the case for some of the other candidates, which included Irving Berlin's Changed Partners, another Berlin song called Now It Can Be Told, and the Mercer Warren song Jeepers Creepers. The Robin Ranger partnership remains perhaps the best example of a Hollywood shotgun wedding which worked out. Between them, Robin and Ranger created a reputation for style and originality that remains untarnished. When I talked to him, Robin was, I won't say proud, because I don't think he knew how to be proud, but he was certainly quietly pleased with the work he'd done with Ranger. But then in 1942, Ranger was killed in an air crash, and Robin found himself looking for new partners. They were plentiful enough, and they included a songwriter turned producer, our old friend Arthur Schwartz. 3 years after that, Robin did something that very few of his fellow professionals in Hollywood ever managed. Remember, he'd gone out west on a 3-month contract. Well, those 3 months eventually stretched into 40 years. But in the late 1940s, Robin returned to Broadway and with Julie Stein wrote one of the great scores of the decade.
I'll be in my room alone every post meridian, and I'll be with my diary and that book by Mr. Gideon. Bye bye, baby, remember you're my baby. When they give you the eye, and just to show that I care, I will write and declare that I'm on the loose, but I'll stay on the square. I'll be gloomy, but send that rainbow to me, then my shadows will fly. Though I'll be gone for a while, I know that I'll be smiling with my baby by and by.
Several memorable songs from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, and maybe that was the musical that received the highest praise of them all. Usually, when best-selling novelists find their work adapted as musicals, they sob bitterly at what's been done to the work and are almost inconsolable. I say almost because there's always a lot of money in it. But at one time, I was talking to that tiny charmer, the late Anita Loos, who had written Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, and she told me she thought the musical was so perfect that she had no complaints, and considered it a faithful musical version of her novel. Praise indeed. And yet when I mentioned the screen version of the show, I detected a look of pain on Leo Robbins' face, and I think I know what that was all about. When they made the picture, they interpolated songs by other writers, and I never thought they had any justification, either political or artistic, for doing that. Well, one other episode in Robbins' career is certainly worth talking about, and that was the 1945 picture he did with Jerome Kern. Now, Robin, whose capacity for hero worship was prodigious, worshipped Kern perhaps more than anybody. And when the production's centennial summer came up, he resolved to do his very, very best work. Now, Robin always worked slowly, and this time too slowly for Kern, who became impatient and soon began to give examples of the imperious behaviour which made him so unpopular with his colleagues. Kern started drafting in songs by other writers, without even referring to the producer. And yet it was a Kern Robbins song in that picture which has slowly gained ground over the years as a standard. Mel Torme usually nominates this one as one of his all-time favourite American ballads.
It's only human for anyone to want to be in love. But who wants to be in love in vain? At night you hang around the house and eat your heart out and cry your eyes out. Why anyone as wonderful as she should cause you such misery and pain? I thought that just just my love to be in love in vain.
Picture Centennial Summer, the one that Kern took over and in so doing treated Robin in such a shocking manner. But Robin, Mr. Nice Guy, had an excuse for Kern. He said, "I think Kern knew he was dying, and when a man knows that, he's bound to become a little impatient." Sweet old Robin, who saw no wrong in anybody. Now, before I come to the end of this tribute to Leo Robin, let me mention the song whose title is so original that I think we don't notice it anymore. But Robin knew it was original, and he always used to perk up whenever he was reminded that that title had actually gone into the dictionaries of quotations.
It's June in January, because I'm in love. It always is spring in my heart with you in my arms. The snow is just white blossoms fall from above, and here is the reason, my dear, your magical charms. The night is cold, the trees are bare, but I can feel the scent of roses in the air. It's June in January, because I'm in love, but only because I'm in love with you. It's only because I'm in love with you. It's June in January.
Some of the best-known words written by Leo Robin. The year was 1934. And in closing this very heartfelt tribute to the most charming and modest of all the great achievers in songwriting, one of Leo Robin's finest exercises in the elusive craft of composing light verse to music. One of the wittiest, most knowing lyrics ever written. Perfectly crafted, ingeniously rhymed, one of the high points in the art of writing for the musical theatre.
Kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. A kiss may be grand, but it won't pay the rental on your humble flat, or help you at the automat. Men grow cold as girls grow old, and we all lose our charms in the end. But square cut or pear shape, those rocks don't lose their shape. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. There may come a time when a lass needs a lawyer, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. There may come a time when a hard-boiled employer thinks you're awful nice, but get that ice or else no dice. He's your guy when stocks are high, but beware when they start to descend. It's then that those louses go back to their spouses. Diamonds are a girl's a best friend.
The great philosophic statement from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, music by Julie Stein, words by Leo Robin, born April the 6th, 1900, died December the 29th, 1984. A modest little man, but a very big writer indeed. And that's it. See you same time next week.
You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.